50 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Board of Education that segregated schools are unconstitutional. But de facto segregation still persists, even in multiracial suburbs with a significant black middle class. This is largely due to what is called the minority achievement gap, the lower average test scores and grades among black and Hispanic students. In fully integrated schools, classes grouped by students' ability still tend to be segregated by race. As part of our series looking at the impact of the Brown decision, Nancy Solomon visits a diverse suburban school district in New Jersey.
The halls of Columbia High School in Maplewood fill up between classes with black and white students, socializing easily with each other. The school is 65% black, itself a victory for a middle-class suburb that sends 93% of its students to college. But as students file into their classrooms, this model of integration is not all that it appears to be. History teacher James Cotter likes to play a game with visitors he calls Guess the Level.
What we're going to do is we're going to walk past classrooms and we're going to look inside and look at the demographics. We'll be able to guess the level just based upon the racial makeup of the classroom. Here's our first chance.
Cotter peers through the skinny window on a classroom door, the first in a long corridor lined with lockers and hand-painted posters about upcoming school activities.
Okay, see a whole bunch of white kids. I'm going to say that this is a four-level class.
Okay, I'm going to explain this one time, people.
Cotter quietly slips into the class, asks a student near the door, and returns to the hall.
It's a four-level class. It's a shame that you can do this so accurately. This is the basic inequality of our school. Hi, Cooper.
Level four are the honors classes for the core academic subjects, English, math, science, and history. As Cotter makes his way down the corridor, he stops at a class where most of the kids are black.
Yeah, that's a level two or a three. I'm going to say three.
Why?
Because I see one, two white kids.
Cotter guesses right every time. He says the levels reflect real skill differences the students have when ninth graders arrive here, having been grouped by ability since the beginning of middle school. But he believes tracking keeps lots of black kids at Columbia High School from achieving their full potential.
As soon as you separate, in my mind, I become, I'm in the dumb class. I'm going to be dumb. I'm going to act dumb, and I'm never going to be smart. That is the essential argument of Brown versus Board of Ed. Segregation is in and of itself an inequality because of what it does to a person's perception of himself and his place in society.
50 years after Brown versus Board of Education, this school is fully integrated, but the classrooms are not. And the story is pretty much the same in diverse suburbs all over the country. Studies show the gap exists the very first day of kindergarten, and it continues to widen as kids make their way to high school. Some researchers suggest this might not be so much about race as it is about class, how well-educated their parents are, how they speak at the dinner table, or how many bedtime stories they read. Annette Leroux, a sociology professor at Temple University, spent time in the homes of families of various incomes and found no differences in how blacks and whites at the same income levels treat their children.
The middle-class parents talk to their children early and often. Some of the parents grilled the children over little things, like, which X-Man do you like the best? And essentially, they were doing the same sort of skills you would do in college. They were developing a thesis, they were supporting it with evidence, and they were drawing a conclusion.
But class differences can't explain everything. The minority achievement gap still persists, even when studies compare kids whose parents have similar education and jobs. In Maplewood, white and black students I spoke with say they think many teachers expect less of black students, and many of their parents agree, especially African Americans who experienced the same thing when they were kids. Robert Marchman is a top executive with the New York Stock Exchange. He remembers growing up in Brooklyn when he changed schools in the seventh grade. After his first day, his father questioned him about which track he was placed in. The next day, Marchman was called to the principal's office, where he found his father, a New York City policeman, waiting.
I'm like, boy, it's only second day. What did I do? And the principal told me, we're going to change you. And you're going now into these other classes. And so my father had a very stern look on his face, and he just said, make sure you do what you got to do, stay in those classes. And I often look back and wonder what would have happened if he didn't intervene and get me into those, what I know now were the honor classes.
Marchman says that problem of teacher expectations continues today. He believes it's made worse by the way kids behave, the way they speak, even the way they dress, with baggy pants and shirts hanging down to their knees.
I think we just have to be candid and say, hey, look, you know, I'm not surprised that when you see this kid in front of you with a white T-shirt, even though he can be the son of a lawyer, you think he's a thug. And A's and B's are the farthest thing from your mind.
The achievement gap is a hot topic at Columbia High School. In a sociology class that mixes levels, students debate what causes it. Is it the influence of rap music, or whether black kids think being in an honors class is acting white? One white student asks why black students wouldn't want to be more like those in power, which sets off this exchange between three African-American students, Conrad Martin, Brandon Williams, and Chigozie Oyone.
Why would you want to be like the, quote, oppressor? Why would you want to act like them? Why would you want to talk like them? We don't look at it as we don't want to be like the oppressor, but I think it's like hammered into our heads. So what you say, subconscious?
Go to BET. Look at all the music videos that they show, look at all the shows. Everybody's wearing, like, authentics. Everybody's rapping. Everybody's shaking their behind in, like, music videos, talking about guns and cars and selling drugs and all this. When this is the image that we're fed, and this is the caricature that we're portrayed as in, like, all of the media.
You blaming it on rap?
I'm blaming it on the imagery that's posted up by the media.
Conrad Martin is a bulky guy, and like many of his fellow students, he's wearing an oversized white T-shirt that reaches his knees. He says black students live in two worlds, caught between their identity as African-Americans and what is expected of them from their teachers, most of whom are white.
Yeah, because my friends, like, I can say, oh, yo, what's good, man? What's really popping with you? Something like that. But, you know, if I walk into a classroom and I'm talking to a teacher, I'll say, oh, how was your weekend, you know?
In this class, though, their sociology teacher is Melissa Cooper, a young African-American with short dreadlocks. Black students here come to her when they feel discriminated against or simply misunderstood. Cooper says middle-class black kids can feel an alienation that their white counterparts don't experience.
Even with mom and dad doing well, it doesn't make a difference. And how I'm perceived, it doesn't make a difference when I go to the mall or who follows me in the store or whether I'm pulled over. That's why middle-class kids, you know, the suburban gangsters, want so badly to earn some credibility by being other than what society says they should be.
Cooper says more African-American teachers are needed, and white teachers need to examine their own racial biases. The school district hired Harvard economist Ronald Ferguson to help close the achievement gap. He's surveyed 34,000 students in diverse middle-class suburbs across the country. Ferguson says minority kids are working just as hard and care just as much about achievement as white kids, but they face a skill gap, and that can best be addressed by figuring out better ways to teach them.
Schooling has been tailored to fit well with a segment of our society that tends to do well academically. And the assumption has been, well, if white students from middle-class backgrounds, for example, do well given the way that we teach, that's probably the best formula for kids from all kinds of backgrounds. That assumption is being questioned.
In Melissa Cooper's Level 3 U.S. History class, almost all the kids are black, and on this day, she has their undivided attention.
Yes, oldest university in the world. Harvard. It was in Timbuktu, but what was it called?
Harvard.
Harvard. We're talking Africa, sweetheart.
Cooper says the more she teaches kids about things relevant to their lives, the more engaged they become. If middle-class suburbs can't close the achievement gap, it'll be harder in communities where money for textbooks must be diverted to metal detectors and security guards.
We will permanently be assigning an underclass in our society that will be based on factors of race, economic status, and other social indicators which kids are just haphazardly born into and have no influence over.
Maplewood, New Jersey is the kind of place black parents come to escape distressed urban schools. And the very existence of a substantial black middle class has its roots in the successes of Brown versus Board of Education. But the lingering achievement gap has taught parents a hard lesson. Moving to the suburbs doesn't necessarily ensure success for the next generation. For NPR News, I'm Nancy Solomon.